This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Still ahead on today's edition of TJMS, we'll hear from Craig Berube, most recently head coach of the St. Louis Blues, and someone who, as a player, if you're old enough, like I am, to remember watching Craig Berube play, was never shy about engaging in what we saw last night at Madison Square Garden. Whether it was playing junior with the New Westminster Bruins or the Kamloops Blazers, he was never shy about being part of those types of affairs, to say nothing about when he was a Philadelphia Flyer or a Toronto Maple Leaf, Calgary Flame. He was never shy about engaging in such activity. But as we know, times have changed. Although the reaction, you know, it was interesting watching. We're standing by here for Sean Reynolds. We'll talk about the Winnipeg Jets facing the Calgary Flames tonight. Nine games on the board this evening around the NHL. You know, the reaction last night on social media was predictable. And all the most likely candidates said the most predictable things about the incident last night. To me, just so I'm clear on this one, because it does feel like one of those moments or one of those situations where you do need to weigh in and get off the fence and defend a position, but just sort of make your position on it stated. And like, I look at the game of hockey and I say it's a very rough sport that occasionally spills into moments like that. I think the league has done a good job steering it away from the games that took 4.5 hours. And I grew up in the era where some games took 4.5 hours to play and you spent more time picking up gloves and sticks off the ice than you did actually engaging in the game itself. But I think that when you have a game like this, there's going to be, whether we like seeing them or not, and the majority of us don't like seeing them, there are going to be injuries. There are going to be, you know, severe injuries for a lot of people. That's just the nature of playing this game. And because it is an emotional, violent game, every now and then you are going to get incidents like that. I think it's a fool's errand to pretend that that is going to be eliminated from the game completely. I think there'll always be an aspect of it, and there'll always be an element of that as well. And I don't think that there's any way right now under this rule book, and maybe you can make the argument for changing the rule book for fights and fighting specifically. Although I think that would fall into the category of be careful what you ask for because of the law of unintended consequences. But, you know, as it exists now, the game has always tried to, and now more so than ever, walk that fine line between presenting a skilled, fast game, but also maintaining an air of danger. And let's be honest about it, violence about it. Right? Like at a certain point, you have to look at yourself in the mirror and say, okay, why do I like hockey? And there's a number of reasons. Like, you may like a lot of things about hockey, but not like a few other things. And I understand that and I get that. But baked into the pie is a level of violence. And baked into the pie for hockey is an element of danger. And this is why whenever anyone, like, I never begrudge a player a nickel for how much they make in the NHL. Like, I always, just considering the nature of the sport and how dangerous it can be, and I'm not just talking about fighting, I'm talking about just the regular day-to-day, you know, playing and practicing and everything. It's the nature of the game itself is a very dangerous game to play. There's the presence of boards in this game. You know, there's the presence of large men skating faster than ever that have now turned the sport from being a contact sport into a collision sport. That is part of it. And I think you have to always ask yourself and be honest with yourself, why do I like this? And even though some people might not want to admit it to themselves, part of that is attractive. Again, to you, whether you want to admit it or not, that is part of the game of hockey. More on this one a little bit later on. We'll talk to Craig Berube about all of it, who's done it on the ice and coached it as well. In the meantime, the Winnipeg Jets up for grabs next. Big game tonight against the Calgary Flames. Big game earlier on this week against the Los Angeles Kings that saw Cole Perfetti back in the lineup and Cole Perfetti stealing the show. Sean Reynolds joins me now. Sean, how are you today, pal?
I'm doing great. How are you, Jeff?
I am doing well. First of all, do you have a thought? I mean, it's one of those incidents where you got to get a thought from everybody on the program about it. Do you have a thought on what we saw last night between the Rangers and the New Jersey Devils 2 seconds in?
When you're a kid, when you fall in love with the game, I think there's part of that sport, that era of the sport that always exists inside you. So I remember being a kid and watching the sports highlights and seeing, you know, the line brawls and all those kind of things. I remember watching, you know, a line brawl in the playoffs, I believe it was in 86, between the Hartford Whalers and the Montreal Canadiens. And, you know, there's people who are going to think this is, you know, caveman type thinking. But when you're a kid and you're watching this, and you're like, man, these guys really care. These guys want this really bad. These guys are willing to fight for everything that they're going after here. And when I see stuff like that, it just kind of makes me feel about that. I mean, the New York Rangers don't have to do this. They're a team that's heading off to the playoffs, and the Devils are a team that aren't. And so there's just a level of emotion that comes with a game like that that I think is sometimes missing from the game over the past. You know, there's going to be people out there who hate it, but that kind of stuff, I don't mind seeing it here and there.
I'm with you on that one. Okay, let's get to the Winnipeg Jets. The Cole Perfetti phenomenon is an interesting one. Cole Perfetti was front and center against the Los Angeles Kings, and that was a big win that snapped the losing streak, etc. Tonight, the Winnipeg Jets face off against the Calgary Flames. Given what we saw, I'm not going to make the whole thing about Perfetti, but I do want to get a thought in here. Given what we saw with Cole Perfetti against the Los Angeles Kings earlier this week, does that change the organization's feeling about him for tonight's game against the Calgary Flames at all?
For tonight's game, yes, but overall, no. So he's back, and he's going to be on that same spot on the second line because Nino Niederreiter took a skate to the back of the leg and is going to be missing some time. Tyler Toffoli will drop down. Their prize trade deadline acquisition will go down to the third line and play on that vaunted. And then Cole Perfetti will get another shot to do what he does there. But I don't think this changes anything. I think game one of the playoffs, you're more likely to see Cole Perfetti out of the lineup than in. And the thing that was fascinating about him, that game feels like it kind of came out of nowhere. Cole Perfetti had been in and out of the lineup. A lot of people are going to say, like, he got popped out of the lineup around the trade deadline, never got back in, got one shot, and boom, this happened, and he should be there. Lots of fans telling me he should never see the press box again. The fact of the matter is, if you take a look at their top six, Toffoli will eventually end up going back into that spot because Nino Niederreiter, they will not break up that third line. It is the secret sauce of this Winnipeg Jets team. Yeah. What you saw from Cole Perfetti is that he got his first opportunity in a long time in the top six. He's mostly been getting an opportunity on the fourth line. Other than that, they thought that maybe they could find some scoring and he could take advantage of some opportunities against other fourth lines. That hasn't really worked out that way. He looks to get out. He doesn't really get, he doesn't have the grind that you would want from a player on that line. So what I see from Cole Perfetti going into the playoffs is a black ace, a very capable black ace that will be waiting for any injuries that may happen in the top six. Opportunities here, but this is Cole Perfetti. This is one game. There's been a lot of games in there that actually led to him getting to the press box. And I don't think this revokes all of that.
Connor Hellebuyck, we've been talking about awards recently, you know, this season winding down, and sure, we'll talk a lot about Vezina, and it does seem as if the Vezina trophy is Connor Hellebuck's to lose. I mean, odds are that he's going to win the whole thing here. I could make a low-key or a minor-key case for him winning the Hart trophy as well. I think that's how important he is to the Winnipeg Jets. But every time we talk to Hellebuyck, he always says, it's not about me, I'm the same goaltender, everything around me has changed. Given how Rick Bowness has this team playing now and how we've talked about, you know, Rick Bowness and, you know, last time Elliot and I talked to him for the podcast, he talked about, you know, getting the dressing room right. And I think, you know what that means. That means, you know, exit Dubois and exit Blake Wheeler. Given how Rick Bowness has handled this team, what are expectations, like what are realistic expectations now for the Winnipeg Jets in the postseason, knowing that they're going to have to face off against someone in the Central in the first round?
Well, it it wasn't long ago I was expecting a really, really long spring out of the Winnipeg Jets, because the way that they were playing in December was going to give them an opportunity to beat anybody. There's been, basically, in my opinion, there's been a drop-off on this team since Christmas time. It's been hidden by the fact that the Jets, I think better than any team in the NHL, have really buried non-playoff teams. Like when the Anaheim Ducks come to town, they smoke the Anaheim Ducks. They play Columbus. I think they outscored them 11-1 on the year or something like that. The Jets really take care of business against teams that play a little bit more wide open hockey. But I think what we've seen here is at the beginning of the year, they controlled the ice all over the ice, no matter who they played against. But as the intensity of the season has gone up and the capability of teams that are rounding into form, kind of erasing some of that open ice, the seesaw that was so tilted in the Jets' favor at the beginning of the year has kind of evened out, and their lack of scoring that has kind of been there all year, and definitely the problems that they've had with special teams, has meant that they've come out on the other side of that, especially against good teams. They haven't done well against playoff teams since Christmas time, which is why that win against L.A. was so refreshing, not just to beat the to snap that six-game losing streak, but to get them, you know, feeling like they're capable of competing with the kind of players they're going to have to compete with in a couple of weeks. But the one thing to me, and I mentioned it earlier, Adam Lowry's line is the secret sauce. You saw them play Anze Kopitar the other night, and they completely erased that line. Now, that line got out against the Jets' second line for like 15 seconds and scored. And so you can tell that's that line that is just capable of erasing the other team's best players. So if you're going to beat the Jets, you better have depth. So against a team like Colorado, who they're probably playing in the first round, they're a really top-heavy team. If Adam Lowry can do his thing and kind of erase that line, now what you're asking is you're asking the Colorado Avalanche's third line to outscore the Jets' second line and their second line to outscore the Jets' first line. I really do think that that gives the Jets a chance if they're playing in that manner. The issue down the stretch here is that third line has continued to be who they are all year, but the first and second lines have never got scoring at the same time, and they still haven't figured things out with Tyler Toffoli yet. So there's a lot of questions to be answered before you can say this team is going to have a legitimate shot of going deeper in the playoffs.
I mentioned awards a second ago, and I don't think that Josh Morrissey is going to win the Norris Trophy, but how much should we consider Josh Morrissey in the conversation and in and around the Cale Makars and the Quinn Hugheses and the Roman Josis and Evan Bouchards?
You know, down the stretch here, we were having that conversation quite a bit, and they love calling him Josh Morrissey here in town. Listen, he's a guy that should be in that conversation. Down the stretch here, though, there was a couple of face-off games, I like to call them, and they played the Vancouver Canucks, and the Vancouver Canucks went out and beat the Jets 5-0, and Quinn Hughes was amazing in that game, and Josh Morrissey didn't have his best game. And then shortly after that, the Nashville Predators came rolling into town, and Roman Josi was hands down the best player on the ice. And Josh Morrissey again had a little bit of an off night. So there's been some face-off games down the stretch here that Josh Morrissey hasn't done himself any favors in. To win the Norris Trophy is something extremely, extremely special. You got to be the tops of the top. I think he should have got more consideration than he got last year, especially in a year where I know it was amazing that Erik Karlsson scored 100 points. But I saw him come into town here in Winnipeg, and he basically had abandoned all defense and was just, you know, trying to get points the other way. And it seemed like the team, that's all their focus was as well. Whereas Josh Morrissey was going out, putting up, I think, a 70-point season and being almost perfect defensively on the other side of things. He is never going to be the guy that wins because he outscores everybody else. But as far as being a player who helps you win, who puts in a significant amount of offense for this team, and has that balance of being just a great defensive player, for me, he is easily top five in the league and knocking on the door of top three.
He is outstanding. We'll be tuned in tonight. It's the Winnipeg Jets facing off against the Calgary Flames. Sean, just a quick one today. Thanks, as always, for stopping, boy. Bye. Enjoy the game tonight.
Yeah, thanks for getting me on, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Pleasure is mine. Sean Reynolds covers the Winnipeg Jets for Sportsnet. One of 9 games on the go around the NHL this evening. It is the Winnipeg Jets facing off against the Calgary Flames. Okay, time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. Matt, Mark, Casey, we have 9 to choose from. Will it be Winnipeg and Calgary, or will it be Carolina and Boston? Who are you picking tonight? What's your eyes on this evening?
All good games, but we're going with the we'll call it the time machine game, because what year is it, Doc Brown? Penguins at the Capitals. The Penguins, the road favorite, minus 1.5 on the puck line. The Penguins are 5-2 straight up in their last 7 in Washington. The over has hit in 13 of the last 20 between these two teams, and the over has hit in 8 of the last 11 overall for the Penguins and 8 of the last 11 Washington home games.
Do you believe, as Elliot and I discussed in the opening segment in the A block, that if Crosby gets this, if Crosby can do this, if Sidney Crosby can get the Pittsburgh Penguins into the playoffs, give that man the Hart Trophy, like, automatically. You know, we talked once upon a time, if Austin Matthews scores 70 goals, that's the opening of the door for the Hart Trophy again for Austin Matthews. Do you say the same for Sidney Crosby if he can get the Pens in?
I really have a hard time, just because of the seasons that the other three guys are having and how individually they're all very impressive and they all have their own little things. Crosby getting them to the playoffs would be amazing. I have a hard time giving him the MVP, even though it's been such a great year for him. Have a hard time.
All right. We'll be tuned in tonight for the What Year Is It game. It is the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Washington Capitals, Ovechkin versus Crosby. What year is this? It's a meaningful game between these two players and these two teams. It's April 4th, 2024. Who thunk it? By the way, something going through the Pittsburgh Penguins lineup as well. We'll see what that means. That was Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. Craig Berube, former NHL head coach, will be another head coach from another team one of these days, probably sooner than later. Stops by to kick off hour 2. Keep it here.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. 9 games on the go around the NHL this evening. Welcome back to the program. Hour 2 of the Jeff Merrick Show. Glad to be with you as always today. Now, it was one of those events that doesn't come around very often, and that is the 2 seconds in line brawl between the New Jersey Devils and the New York Rangers last night. Now, we've seen these things before, whether it was the Rangers against the Devils previously, whether it was the Rangers against the Washington Capitals perhaps most recently, whether it's the Calgary Flames and the Vancouver Canucks with Bob Hartley and John Tortorella, or whether we think about coaches going at it between the benches like Patrick Waugh and Bruce Boudreau. There was a certain element of old school that we saw yesterday at Madison Square Garden, and it was a new school play, and it was old school tone in last night's game. And when you think about players that and people that walk that line between old school and new school, you get to the name Craig Berube pretty quickly. He's a Stanley Cup champion coach with the St. Louis Blues, and he joins me now. Craig, thanks so much for stopping by today. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
What did you, it's one of those events where, like, you have to ask everybody what their thoughts on it were. I mean, we don't see line brawls 2 seconds into a game very often, but Craig, what did you think when you saw this last night, and was all of it inevitable in your estimation?
Well, I think it goes back to the 2 hits Rempe had on 2 of the Jersey Devil players 2 games ago, and then the last game, and then going into tonight. And I think, you figured something would happen. I didn't think it'd be a 5-on-5 brawl, though, or 4 people, 4 different fights. I figured Rempe would have to take on McDermott at some point. But, you don't see that too often. I mean, it's just, I don't know. Everybody liked it. Fans were going crazy. I mean, it's not something that, is promoted that much anymore, or is in the league, to be honest with you. But I think there's obviously some bad blood between those two teams because of the two hits.
You know, I think you're bang on about, listen, everybody at MSG loved it. And, you know, I think back to the great line by Harry Neal when he said, you know, we're going to have to do something about all this fighting in the league, or we're going to have to make bigger buildings. Like, at the end of it, like, part of the attraction to hockey in general is that it is a rough, tough, and occasionally violent sport. The one thing that I found really interesting was Travis Green after the game mentioned that, you know, none of this would have happened if essentially Rempe and McDermott just would have, you know, done it in the last game. We understand that Rempe was under orders not to do so by Peter Laviolette. Do you think that all of this just would have been all dealt with if they just would have settled it the last time they played?
I don't think you would have saw the line brawl like that happened last game if it was settled the game before, for sure. I mean, when you gotta, in my opinion, the hit, you know, was a dirty hit. He got suspended for it. Mm-hmm. But when you do things like that, in my opinion, when you're a player like Rempe, you got to answer the bell, you know, I think as quickly as possible, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Idea of being.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Craig.
No, I'm just saying.
Idea of being. Sorry, we have a little bit of a slight delay. Go ahead, Craig. Go ahead.
No, I'm just going back to, you know, when things happen at the time, and you don't take care of business. You know what I mean? Like, when you make a hit like that, you gotta back it up. I mean, that's just part of the game. I think that goes back a long, long way, way back in the game. When you do things like that, you know, you got to back it up and take care of it. And, you know, if it was done right away, you know, then you probably wouldn't have seen the line brawl last night.
So, you see, you're one of the few people who we could have on this program who have, coached the NHL, won a Stanley Cup, been involved on the ice in situations like that. I think about you playing in the Western Hockey League as well, and then right through into the NHL and Calgary and Philadelphia, Toronto and Washington, etc. When you're involved, like, talk to us as a player here, Craig. When you're involved in a line brawl like that, what do you need to be paying attention to at all times? I mean, there's certainly the fight that you're in, but are you thinking about anything else at that point?
I think it depends on what kind of a player you're mixed up with, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, I've been in line brawls where I had one, I was playing with Calgary, and Cliff Ronning came and grabbed me from Vancouver, and Cliff and I were teammates in New Westminster. And I said, what are you doing, Cliff? Yeah. I mean, like, I'm not going to fight you. So Cliff, he's just, you know, he's messing with me and he's trying to hit me and stuff. And I'm just holding him out there, but I'm actually watching what's going on, because, you know, sometimes you get tangled up with the wrong person, and you might not be a fighter and the other guy is. And I don't think you want somebody taking advantage of your teammate too much. So I've been in these things, and, I've gotten rid of my guy that I was with and went and helped out a teammate before, just because of that situation, you know. So I think it depends, like, but if you're in a fight like McDermott and Rempe last night, I don't think you're thinking about anything but that fight, because that's a big-time heavyweight fight.
How much one of the things that I was thinking about with this one, I want to move off the Ranger Devils page here in a second, but I do want to ask you about, you know, what goes through your mind in a situation like that? Like, if I'm Matt Rempe, I know I have to do this. Travis Green has, you know, submitted his opening lineup, and there's Curtis McDermott on it, and Laviolette's coming back with me. Left winger, right winger, we're lining up against each other here. How much in the back of maybe both guys' heads are, this is Madison Square Garden, this game is being broadcast nationally on TNT, I just don't want to get embarrassed here? Is that a factor here? Like, how much does that go through your mind?
Yeah, I think it does go through your mind before it all happens, even leading up to the game. I think they're thinking about it already. Definitely, yeah. That's a big part of it. You don't want to lose. You don't want to be embarrassed. You want to make, you know, you want to do a good job. That's me personally when I, back when I played and how I felt about things. You're not going to win all your fights and you're not going to lose all your fights. But like you said, you don't want to be embarrassed. You don't want to get knocked out. There's all those things that will play in your mind. But before the game and, you know you're going to start the game, you know the other person's starting the game, that's not going through your head. You're just getting fired up, ready to go, I think, and, you know, kind of going through some thoughts in your head of how you're going to handle it, you know, the fight.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, and this doesn't necessarily have to do with fighting, but I've always felt that given the nature of the sport, it's a rough sport, it's a physical sport, you know, it's an enclosed sport. There's no out of bounds in hockey. Like, you hit the boards, there's no out of bounds here. Intimidation has always been a part of hockey. And again, that doesn't always mean fighting, but I am curious, from your point of view now, as a coach, what is the role of intimidation in the game? Some teams will intimidate with their power play. Some teams will intimidate physically. What's the role of intimidation in your mind in 2024 in the NHL?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think, you know, intimidation would come from how a team plays more than anything. I think there is some teams like, you know, the Panthers. Or to me, the intimidation comes from the Panthers is, they're a physical team that's going to get involved no matter what. You know, they go at you hard. They're physical. There's scrums all the time after every, you know, seems like, a you know, throughout a game, there's five scrums in the game around the net and things like that. So that is how that's how the Panthers play, and that's how they try to impose their willingness on the team. More, I use that word rather than intimidation. I don't really believe intimidation is a big part of the game anymore. Yes, you know, when you're playing the Edmonton Oilers or the Toronto Maple Leafs or the Tampa Bay Lightning, you're talking about, you know, staying out of the penalty box because their power plays are so dangerous, and that's how they can hurt you, right? So I think, you know, going into each game and each team, there's things that teams do really well, and that's their intimidation, I would say. I don't feel like there's a fighting intimidation anymore. Yes, you know, there's guys on teams like Rempe and McDermott and Reeves and just, you know, a few different guys in the league. But, you know, I don't think players are too worried about it, to be honest with you, because they don't have to mess with those guys anyhow. It's not like the old days where, you know, a player like Bob Probert could come out and, you know, you never know what he's going to do or, you know, things could happen. But that's not happening. The rules in the game and the way the game is played. But, you know, there is intimidation, I believe, a little bit with a physical play. You can be, if you got a physical team that's going to forecheck hard and be physical and, you know, in the D zone coverage, are going to take the body on you. You know, skilled guys do not want to get hit like that. That's just in their nature, most of them. And, you know, you can intimidate a little bit that way by being a physical team.
Let me talk about, you know, that era that you played specifically. I always considered that to be the toughest time in the history of the NHL. I know people may disagree with me, but, you know, to your point, like, there were a lot of sluggers on the ice at that time. And, you know, legends, you mentioned Bob Probert. I think we could throw Dave Brown into that conversation as well. And you're right in there with those two names as well. I remember Marty McSorley telling me a story when he went from Pittsburgh to Edmonton. I mean, he was young and he was game and he wanted to do it every night. And Dave Semenko was on the team and Semenko said, no, we're not doing it tonight. No, Marty, we're not going to do it tonight. No, Marty, we're not going to do it tonight. And Marty was always game to go. And Marty said, I came into the rink one day and, you know, Dave was taping up his wrists and he said, now, Marty, every now and then we must remind them. And tonight, we're going to remind them. And that was, I mean, you remember the late, great Dave Semenko, and boy, do I ever miss him. One of the, he's real smart too and a really nice guy, but boy, was he ever raw bone tough. And Marty always talked about him like he was a real mentor for Marty McSorley. Did you have anyone like that in your life, Craig, when you played?
Yeah, for sure. Dave Brown, you know, when I broke into the Flyers organization in 86, Dave Brown was there. You know, Rick Tocchet, they were on the team. And I think, you know, I look at how they taught me, you know, things in the NHL and the fighting aspect of it and when to do it, when not to do it. And I learned a lot from those two guys. And, you know, for me, that those two guys were, you know, a big help to me in the NHL. You know, I think that I played the minors that year in Hershey for most of the season, and John Paddock was my coach. And John was a real mentor to me too that way. And you know, I had some real great people in that organization that helped me out. Paul Holmgren, for one, he was an assistant coach up there. So I was surrounded by a lot of real good people that really helped me along the way and you know, taught me the ropes.
To the game today, and it is the stretch drive now for the playoffs, and you know, the jockeying for position for that final playoffs, the final wild card spot in the Eastern Conference, which is one of the more bizarre races we've ever seen. Teams are in, teams are out. Nobody seems to want this thing. But who's impressed you so far down the stretch? Other teams that have already cemented playoff spots. Geez, Dallas has won 8 games in a row. Teams that are going on a run. We see what Tampa's doing right now, or maybe it's, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins, when we wrote them off and thought that they were dead and by the roadside, all of a sudden, you know, if they win tonight, they're 1 point out of a playoff spot. Who impresses Craig Berube right now?
Well, there's quite a few teams, I think, that are very impressive right now. You know, let's just, you know, for me, I think let's start in the East. The New York Rangers are a very good team, and I think they added two pieces at the deadline that gives them depth. Wennberg and Roslovic. So I think that just helps them with depth. But I really like their team. They're strong in goaltending the position with both goalies. Their decor is solid. Really good decor, in my opinion. And they got some stars up front that are playing at a high level. Panarin and Zibanejad. Kreider does what he does. But Lafreniere's really come around this year and been scoring. But I like the New York Rangers, and I like the Panthers in the East and the Hurricanes with the ads that they got at the deadline. I think those two ads with Gensel and Kanetsov at the deadline really, really helped their team a lot. I think in the past, in the playoffs, they've kind of haven't found that goal when they needed it, and I think that these two guys might get them over the hump. That's a very good team. That's a deep team, 4-line, 6-D. They use everybody. They're hard to play against. They don't give up much. It's going to be a tough team to beat, along with the Panthers that I got up there in the East. Now, Tampa Bay's making a great push right now. They're playing some great hockey. Their top-end players are still elite and playing at a high level. I just worry about the decor a little bit. Sergachev being out, losing McDonough. And, you know, the decor is not quite as good as it used to be. In the West, Nashville Predators have been very impressive for me. I know they're dropped a couple in a row here, but, you know, I didn't have them slotted to be where they're at right now, to be honest with you. At the start of the season, I wasn't sure how that team was going to turn out, but they've been playing great. Andrew Burnett's got them playing at a high level. They're playing a system to a team, in my opinion. That's a good team right now, but let's go to the Vancouver Canucks. I like the Canucks. You know, I think what I really like about them right now is they're not scoring a lot right now. Their power play is not clicking like it was, and their top-end guys aren't scoring as much. But they're winning games 3-2. They're winning games 2-1. They're finding ways to win games. They're playing good defense. And that's very important going into playoffs, is play good defense. And, you know, yes, they do need to score goals a little bit more than they are, but I feel their top end guys will get that back. So, and they'll get Demko back in net. So they'll be a dangerous team. Obviously, you got to still go through Vegas, in my opinion. They, you know, and they're playing real good hockey right now. They're starting to really come around. Eichel's starting to really play again. He's been out a while. They need some injuries back still with goaltending. There's a little bit of an issue for them right now, but that's still a very good team for sure. And, you know, the West is going to be tough because you got Dallas, you got Colorado. Love both those teams. Great pickups at the deadline, in my opinion. Tanev's a great pickup for Dallas. I think it really solidifies their decor with a right-hand D-man that plays the way he plays the game. And I love Colorado's pickups. Walker's a very underrated defenseman. I watched him here in Philly a lot of the year. He's a good player. Middle stats really come around as a player, obviously. And they needed that second line center. And the other guy, Trennan, I really like. That's a good team. Very good team, Colorado. And obviously the last one for me is the Oilers. The Oilers are the Oilers. They got, you know, obviously stars on that team, great players. They got depth. You know, we'll see how that turns out. But it's going to be a battle in the West, in my opinion. There's a lot of teams that, you know, that are very good and could come out of there.
Yeah, the Western Conference is fascinating, Craig. I look at the West and I think about each individual team and I say to myself, if I'm Vancouver, Edmonton, Dallas, Winnipeg, whomever, there's nobody that I want to face off in the opening round. Like, everybody looks like a nightmare to me in the opening round. Let me close by asking you about John Tortorella. And yesterday, I'm not sure if you saw the press conference that Tortorella gave, but, you know, he talked a lot about convincing the team that they're here. No matter what the expectations were, they're here. They're in a playoff spot. I don't want to hear about, you know, it's found money, or I'm paraphrasing torts here. But essentially one of his messages was, we need to convince our players that they're here and I still need to get them to a different level. And when I heard him say that, Craig, I thought about you and I thought about your St. Louis Blues in 2019. And we know how much of a tumultuous season that was to start. This guy's getting sent to the AHL. This guy's getting waived. This guy's getting traded. And all of a sudden, you know, Binnington comes up. And all of a sudden it was, you know, the St. Louis Blues suddenly had a rocket attached to their back. And here we go. And next thing you know, Craig Berube is holding the Stanley Cup. Was there a moment for you in the season where you had to reinforce to all your players that, guys, you know, we're here. We need to deal with the fact that we're here. This isn't luck. This isn't, you know, good timing or whatever. I thought of what Tortorella was saying, and I'm thinking to myself, I wonder if Craig Berube had the same conversation or similar conversations with his St. Louis Blues team in 2019. Did you have those talks?
Oh, for sure. I think, you know, I would say most coaches do. I mean, I think they all coach, every coach does it in their own way. And I know exactly what Torch is. I get what he's talking about, 100%. And for sure, I've had some real tough meetings with the whole team, you know, year in and year out in St. Louis about, you know, all kinds of things. And they're not always fun meetings, but you know, you go into them and you're just honest with your group, and you tell them exactly what you're seeing and what needs to change. Might be an individual, it might, you know, or it could be the whole team. Yeah, I've had some pretty tough meetings with the Blues over the years, but you know, the players, they're fine with it because it's honesty, and you know, exactly what Torch was saying yesterday. They're tough meetings, but they're honest meetings, and you leave the meeting. Hopefully you get the message across to your team, and hopefully your leaders grab that message and carry it forward. That's what you're hoping.
Great analysis, as always. As an aside, love watching you on TNT. Continued success. We'll catch up soon. Enjoy the playoff races and into the playoffs. Thanks so much for doing this, Craig.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Jeff.
There he is, Craig Berube, Stanley Cup champion, coach with the St. Louis Blues, and honestly, like, one of the most raw bone tough players in his era. And he was in an era where it's not just, well, there's a handful of guys that can really handle themselves. No, everybody had sluggers. At least two, sometimes three, occasionally four on every single team. And they were the legends that, you know, the tough guys of today still refer back to. And, you know, coaching with St. Louis as well. And the one thing about the St. Louis Blues, I've always tried to make this point. We always think of the Philadelphia Flyers as being, oh, the Broad Street Bullies and toughest team and toughest on the block and all that. The Philadelphia Flyers were a reaction to the St. Louis Blues. Coming off of expansion 1967, the Blues were the bullies. And, you know, it's always been this way, that the St. Louis Blues have always wanted tough teams and always had players that were tough on all of their teams through all of the different eras. The one common thread you can draw between the St. Louis Blues from expansion right through to the current day, they've always had tough players. That's always been something that fan bases wanted. That's one thing that the team has always been about. And quite bluntly, the Philadelphia Flyers, and most specifically their late owner Ed Snyder, just grew sick of the St. Louis Blues, to be blunt, beating them up on a consistent basis. And the Blues, in the first 3 years of existence, because they had the expansion teams in one conference and the six established NHL teams in another conference, the St. Louis Blues were always the one that went to the Stanley Cup final. Now, they didn't win a game, but they're always the ones that got there. And finally, after the LaForge incident, Ed Snyder said, enough's enough. And the Philadelphia Flyers completely changed directions. But it was because of the St. Louis Blues. It was because of all of those players. It was because of the Plagers and Gassoff and Picard and all those guys. The Flyers became who they were because of the St. Louis Blues. Okay, that's the end of that history lesson for the day. But thanks to Craig Brewery for stopping by. And, you know, we talked yesterday with Wyshynski about coaches and their personalities and which teams need coaches that have certain personalities. And one of the teams that we wonder about are the Buffalo Sabres and their decision on their coaching situation. Does Granato and that staff come back, or do they look for a different direction? And if so, what is the style of coach you could see going in there? I don't think you could go wrong by looking at Craig Berube. The thing about Craig is too, you know, once you've won the Stanley Cup as a head coach, all of a sudden you enter a whole new discussion. Like, that is the power of winning the Stanley Cup. Teams always talk about want to get someone who's done it before, been successful before, has the track record, has the resume. You know, Craig Berube and that St. Louis Blues team. Like, when the book is written on this era of hockey, and there should be plenty of books written on this era of hockey, St. Louis Blues is going to have a really wild chapter. Pause 1 second. I have a sip of coffee. The St. Louis Blues, I don't want to say we're a freak team, but they were one of the most interesting teams. And I referenced that season with Craig there a couple of seconds ago, because there was a number of things that happened that year. Certainly there was the coaching change, and Craig Berube came in. There was also, and I can remember this day specifically, was right around a time when the St. Louis Blues were in Toronto, and there was a belief that in the next subsequent couple of days that Jay Bouwmeester was going on waivers. Now, it never happened, but there were a number of other things that didn't happen as well. There was the situation where Pat Maroon was going to be sent to the American Hockey League. And the interesting thing about that was, and as much as Pat Maroon was a big part of the St. Louis Blues winning that Stanley Cup in 2019, you know, when you look at Pat Maroon, if he gets sent to the American Hockey League at that point in 2018-19, there's no guarantee that Pat Maroon ever makes it back to the NHL. Patrick Maroon has won the Stanley Cup three times, you know, once with the St. Louis Blues and twice with Tampa. There's no guarantees that Pat Maroon ever comes back to the NHL. You know, you talk about in sports, in hockey, in life, so much of it is about luck and timing. You know, there's an element, I'm sure, where Pat Maroon looks back on that year and says he was lucky he didn't get sent down to the American Hockey League, because he's got three Stanley Cup rings because of it. And it was the power of Jordan Binnington that year. Like, it was the power of a lot of things, and that blue line was great, and Alex Pietrangelo was super elite, Ryan O'Reilly having one of the best seasons of his career. All these things are true. But that was the Jordan Binnington show. Make no mistake about it. And as Kevin Woodley reminded us on the program, was it yesterday that Woodley was on? When you look at the Vezina Trophy this year, it'll probably be won by that goaltender in Winnipeg by the name of Connor Hellebuck. Jacob Markstrom should be in the conversation as well, but the one thing that Woodley went out of his way to mention as well is how great a season Jordan Binnington is having with the St. Louis Blues, and don't sleep on Binnington, which if you're someone who's looking at, okay, well, you know, there's the international tournament next year, and then there's the Olympics coming up as well. And if you're a Canadian hockey fan, who's going to be playing net for you? Jordan Binnington is going to be right up around top of that list. A really, really good goaltender. I know whenever we talk about Binnington, we kind of get sidetracked, and we talk a lot about, you know, will someone just please give him his fight? And by the way, just for a matter of having it on the record, even though the teams don't mix very often, I still have, and I'm taking Pyotr Kochetkov as the goaltender that finally gets to give Jordan Binnington his fight. Marc-Andre Fleury came close. Those damn linesmen getting in the way. But my bet is on Pyotr Kochetkov, who actually gets it done. But nonetheless, quick digression. Just want to make sure that I have that on the record. And if it never happens, forget that we had the conversation. But if it does, don't worry, I'll be doing a victory lap here on the program. But Binnington's played great, and it'll be curious to see what happens with the St. Louis Blues as well in the offseason. And the one thing that we learned about the St. Louis Blues, and we saw this play out through the Jordan Kyrou situation after Jordan Kyrou's comments after Craig Berube got dismissed and Drew Bannister came in on an interim capacity, they love Berube in St. Louis. That coach, I mean, listen, in wherever Pat Quinn went, for example, even, you know, after he left, they always loved him in all of those markets. And the same is the same. The same vibe is still there in St. Louis with Craig Berube. Craig Berube is going to be a coach again in the NHL, probably as soon as next season. Like, I do wonder about, you know, the carousel. We always see the coaching carousel in the offseason. I mentioned the Buffalo Sabres, the New Jersey Devils have to make a decision on their bench boss as well. Is Travis Green going to have the team full-time? Is there going to be another coach there? Like, I wonder about Claude Julien and when he gets back in the mix here. And I think Craig Berube, as a former Stanley Cup champion, will be probably back in the mix as well, most likely sooner than later. Enjoy him on television while you still have him. And he's really good on that TNT panel. Enjoy him while you have him on television, because he'll be behind a bench sooner than later. And to think about it, too. And again, everything all about timing. I can recall, what year would it have been? It was years ago before he came back. You know, he was interviewing with Mannheim. I think it was Mannheim. Yeah, it was Mannheim. Interviewing with Mannheim in the German league. Didn't end up getting the job. But I remember because Keith Acton was interviewing right around the same time as well. Anyhow, always interesting to see the coaching carousel and where people end up. And all I'm saying here is Craig Berube is a really good coach, and Craig Berube is going to be back coaching in the NHL sooner than later. And that will take a pause. Matt Marchese stops by in a couple of moments. It's that kind of day. Ask about the big event. The big event, the ripple effect still being felt and heard and talked about on shows like this. Matt Rempe versus Curtis McDermott, New Jersey versus the New York Rangers, Travis Green versus Peter Laviolette, fan base versus fan base on social media, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the question that we have out of all of it was and is, did it settle anything? Or did it just heat the embers up a little bit more for next season? Because I still maintain nothing was settled. McDermott and Rempe had their fight, but that wasn't even the story. The story was the renewal of that feud. Last year, that rivalry was all about the Devils beating the Rangers in the postseason. Now these two teams, the emotional factor is really high and the temperature is hot still between the Rangers and the Devils. I don't think that that did anything else other than throw another log on the fire. Let's see what Maddie thinks here in a couple of seconds. And we'll get to some of your tweets to today's question of the day. What's the best rivalry in hockey? Not just NHL, what's the best rivalry in hockey right now? Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts. Marchese's next.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. A couple of moments here, about 20 minutes left in the show, wrapping things up with our man, Matt Marchese. Matty, nickel and dime thoughts on what we saw last night at MSG. We thought it was going to be Curtis McDermott and Matt Rempe, but we kind of got a whole lot more.
I think we need to eliminate fighting, Jeff. The fans don't like it. I saw people leaving. I saw all of the negativity surrounding it. Yeah, no, fans hate fighting in hockey, and it means nothing to the game, Jeffrey.
We saw a lot of clutching of the pearls about it yesterday and shrieking about it.
Oh, stop.
Listen. My point off the top of the show was this: like, it doesn't happen very often. I don't mind the line brawl every now and then. If it's every single night, it can kind of be tedious and stupid. This one had a story behind it, and these two teams have a rivalry behind them. And I don't want to, try to even pretend to feign surprise at anything that we saw last night. These things happen every now and then. I think it's just the byproduct of having a game that is rough and a game that is at times dangerous and certainly always has the potential to be violent. That's hockey, folks.
Yeah.
That's hockey.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I thought, like, that aside, the game itself was really good too. I think when you have, even if there's a couple fights, but at the end of the day, what we want is some animosity. That's what we want, Jeff. We want animosity. We want the games to mean something. And I thought that game was all-encompassing yesterday, even for a team like the New Jersey Devils, they're in it, but they're not really actually in it. And for the Rangers, who are fighting for top spot in the NHL right now, I thought it was great.
Did you see the time on ice for a lot of these players? We'll just focus on the New Jersey Devils, who have the day off, by the way. They can
thankfully
all sleep in. They all slept in this morning. Brendan Smith, 28-20.
He hasn't played
Nico
that since
Hischier,
the minor midget Marlies, Jeff.
Playing with Sam Gagner and Nakeem Alou and Justin Vibe, you're right, and all those guys, Brian Cameron. Nico Hischier, 25-59. Simon Nemec, 26-23. Timo Meier, 23-27. Here's the big one. Luke Hughes, 32-49. A bit over half the game yesterday. Jesper Bratz at 23. Jonas Siegenthaler at 26. Jack Hughes at 24. Holy, I guess that's what happens when, eight guys get ejected 2 seconds in.
Yeah, well, my favorite stat of the entire evening was that Matt Rempe has like 47 minutes in penalties against the Devils and has only played like just over 5 minutes. Like that is next level. Good.
He doesn't last very long against the New Jersey Devils. Hey, don't get too comfortable seeing Matt Rempe out there if he's playing against the New Jersey Devils. He'll be gone soon. That was really something that we saw yesterday. And it was good of Craig Berube to stop by as well. Did you ever, or were you too young to remember, the Craig Berube era? When he played in the NHL, how, there were so many gunslingers everywhere.
So I kind of caught the tail end of that. The recollections I have of hockey at that point, 96, 97 is when I really kind of, I remember that stuff. I always tell you, the 96 World Cup of Hockey is some of the best hockey I've ever seen in my life, because it had everything, right?
So
it was
good.
Nasty, and the Canadians didn't even win. But I remember that era. So it would have been the Domies, and I guess not the tail end of Probert, but kind of nearing the tail end of Bob Probert. Like, that era I remember. But I've heard the stories about the Semenkos and I mean, Marty McSorley could certainly throw him. And I've heard stories about Dave Brown and Troy Crowder and all those names. And it's so I remember watching the Rock'em Sock'ems from, before, when I remembered a lot of things about hockey. So I remember seeing all those. But yeah, there was a time, and I know we're so far away from that, but those guys were tough, tough, tough. And when you look at their numbers, they were there for one job and one job only. And Craig Berube played over 1,000 games doing that job, over 3,000 penalty minutes. Not an easy job, but if you could do it and be really good at it, I mean, worked out for some.
I always like to tell the story, and you've heard it before, about Dave Semenko, who was one of my favorites. Just absolutely love Dave Semenko. Scored the last goal in the history of the WHA, Edmonton, Winnipeg. Dave always liked to engage in what he called, I believe he called it this, witty goon talk.
Mm-hmm.
He hated the, you know, you straddle up to someone, we're going to go to the drop of the puck. Rah, 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 rah. It was never really about that. He hated that. What Dave would do in a very low, deep voice, which Dave Semenko had, and he spoke slowly and deliberately. So he would saddle up next to someone on the face-off. I can just imagine hearing this from Dave Semenko and thinking like, oh, God. Straddle up next to someone at the face-off, and he would say, why don't you and I go on a little canoe ride? Which was his way of saying, at the drop of the puck, you and I are going to fight.
Yeah.
Why don't you and I go on a little canoe ride? I always love stuff like that.
That sounds like hockey mafia talk.
That was the late, great Dave's. It totally does. It completely does. But it's moments like those at MSG from last night that we think back to a different era of hockey. But again, like I just look at this is the byproduct of, you know, a couple of bad hits by one player specifically getting under the listen. That's why they went out and made the move for Curtis McDermott.
Of course.
Right? Like, when you saw that trade, like, right away with Colorado, like, there's only one thing that goes through your mind. That trade was made for Matt Rempe.
The deterrent.
That player is being brought in. Like, he's being brought in for Matt Rempe. And now what I do wonder is, do the New Jersey Devils ever disarm themselves? Now that they saw, you know, what happened to Nathan Bastian, what happened to Jonas Siegenthaler, do they ever disarm themselves? Because we've seen this before, right? We always see this with Penguins. We see this with the Pittsburgh Penguins, where, you know, the Penguins would, you know, never have, you know, like a real tough player, and then something would happen, and they'd bring someone in, and then there'd be, you know, a couple of scraps, and then they did it with Ryan Reeves.
Yep.
Right? They did that before with... Doug McLean told me the story. He was watching, when he was running the Columbus Blue Jackets, Doug told me the story. He was watching would have been a Saturday afternoon game. It was Boston and Pittsburgh. And all night long, Hal Gill was going at Mario Lemieux nonstop. And Craig Patrick would have been the general manager of the Penguins at that time. And Doug called him up and said, like, geez, Craig, like, aren't you sick of watching, you know, Mario Lemieux get roughed up every single night? And Craig's like, yeah, I'm trying to find someone, trying to get something. And that's how, and it was all through Doug just watching that one game in the afternoon. That started the discussions that led to the Christoph Oliwa trade.
The Polish Prince.
Between the Columbus Blue Jackets, the Polish Prince. Boy, was he ever tough.
Oh, he was big, too.
I always thought Marius Tchaikovsky. Marius Tchaikovsky was the Polish Prince.
He's like, the Polish
king. Have some respect, everybody. Okay, very good. But that began the conversations about that trade. But the Penguins would always do that. Always have a couple of guys kicking around and then just kind of let them go and almost like disarm themselves. I don't know that New Jersey does that again. I don't know that New Jersey puts themselves in a position where they're going to have guys get roughed up and not have an answer for it.
Well, and
that's
not
how it feels to me anyway.
And not only that, it's not as if they have a bunch of guys that play a tough style either. They're built a certain way. They're a very skilled team. Like, they don't have a bunch of guys that are going to drop the mitts. Poor John Marino last night has to go up against that monster Keandre Miller. And then Keandre Miller taunts him with the, you know, the height thing, which was, I mean, it's not John Marino's fault. He's shorter than you. But I agree. I don't think that you can, if you're in New Jersey, continue to have a team like you do and not have some deterrence, or at least one. You need to have one guy. And I think you and Wish talked about it yesterday. Like, the veteran mix on that team is going to change. It needs to change. And so I do wonder if part of that is adding some guys that play a different style of hockey than the other players currently residing in New Jersey.
Well, here's what I wonder, just bluntly. Curtis McDermott's a UFA at the end of the year. Does New Jersey resign him?
I mean, they should. Like, Brendan Smith is the guy that goes out and fights people. And no disrespect to Brendan Smith. He's had a wonderful career. But that's Brendan not the guy Smith that should be doing
should not
it.
Should be doing that.
Exactly. But he's the guy who's been doing it
should
for
not
them.
Be doing that.
Yeah. So they need to.
Not be
or somebody
that.
Else like that, Jeff. If it's not Curtis McDermott, it's got to be someone else. I know people hate the thought of, oh, you know, these guys and, You know, it was the funniest thing. I had a conversation with someone, and they always said, like, everybody talks about Colorado, and they play this skill game and whatever. But Curtis McDermott was on that team. That was their deterrent. That's why people don't take runs at Nathan MacKinnon very often, although you don't want to because he's a beast. But that is, you know, part and parcel for why people stayed away from Nathan MacKinnon, because there was a deterrent there. And so, people can't tell me that doesn't mean anything.
Here becomes the conversation then. And I think, like, as of right now, as far as, like, emotional timber, like, right now it's New Jersey and New York.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's it. Like, these two teams, like, that is the rivalry in the NHL right now. So threw this one out earlier. What's the best rivalry in the NHL?
There's
so
some Raphael Hanson,
great handles. Yeah, some good. Florida versus whoever they play on any given night.
Yep.
Florida is, like, to the east, like, Florida kind of has become what the Vegas Golden Knights have become.
Sort of,
where,
yeah,
everybody hates them in their conference, right? Everybody. And the common denominator is Vegas has great games with everybody. Like, mm-hmm, Vegas has great games with Minnesota. Vegas has great games with Winnipeg. Has great games with Edmonton. Has great games with LA. And when they were a good team, they had great games with the San Jose Sharks.
Because they play that, Vegas, they can play any style,
everybody.
Right?
Florida's the same way, bud.
Can I?
Florida, so, and that's why.
Can I interject with Florida here? Is it Florida versus everyone, sure, they play, or is it Matthew Tkachuk and Nick Cousins versus everyone that they play? Because I wonder if there is.
I think it's. I think there's a healthy
Sam
dose
Bennett
of Ryan
too.
Lomberg in
Ryan
there as
Lomberg,
well.
That's true.
And Sam
that's
Bennett.
True. That's true.
There's, it's not just those two. There's a little bit more than that,
but
as
what
well.
But what's the common denominator here, Jeff? Why do you have good rivalries with the Florida Panthers? Because they play a style that is combative, and they're nasty, and the game needs more of that. Yeah. I hate to tell people, but that's what makes it fun is when the games are nasty, at least a little bit.
And you have one guy that's done some dumb stuff in Nick Cousins. Yep. Matt has a funny one. The Buffalo Sabres versus their fan base. They got some repair work to do there. Like, this is a big off. I know we've talked a lot about the Buffalo Sabres here on the show, but Kevin Adams knows he's got a big job ahead on in the offseason, and fans are rightfully pissed. So Matt submits that one. Here's one. Oh, ouch. The Ottawa Senators versus a 900 save percentage.
I think that was my favorite one.
And if they could only
That was my favorite one. Or there's this one from Matt Mahar. It's a tie. Detroit, New York Islanders, Washington, Philadelphia, and Pittsburgh versus themselves. Weirdest wild card race of all time.
That's true, and this is, and we keep talking about this, and they mentioned this on television last night as well, and that is, this is a protein shake for everyone who thinks that there's enough teams that are in the playoffs right now and don't want the expanded playoffs and don't want more teams in.
Yeah,
right now. Don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, man, will someone please take this thing? Like, I don't know that we want it. You know, there was it was last season where we knew by, was it like early January?
Pretty much, yeah.
What, you know, who the top eight were going to make. We don't want that. But also we don't want this.
Oh, I don't know. I like this.
Someone please try. Like,
this is chaos.
Do you really?
Jeff. Yes, this is chaos. This is what you go to bed at night dreaming for. It's chaos.
No, this is a turtle walk is what this is. Like, I'd rather have a couple of teams that are really going for it that are close. Like, you know, you want, like, well, actually, you know what you do want? You want both the Philadelphia Flyers and the Washington Capitals to win out so that final game of the year means something. So all of a sudden, Washington versus Philadelphia, game 82 for both has consequences attached to it. Whoever wins is in, and whoever is out, whoever loses is out.
That's great viewing.
That's what
numbers.
You want, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, or you want that last Pittsburgh Islanders game, game 82 for both those teams. You want that game 82 to mean something. One wins, one stays, one loses, one goes.
Yeah, I like
that. That's what you want. And you have the potential. But you want teams to win along the way here. They're moonwalking into the playoffs here. They're going backwards. Here's one from Ryan J. Wyshynski versus the New York Rangers for not having a mascot. Yeah, Wish is not a big fan of that as well.
How about this one? L Bloom 84, Minnesota Wild fans versus Bedard's plus minus.
Oh, they want Faber bad for Calder. Oh,
By the way.
Yes, they do.
By the way, Jeffrey, this is a conversation that, because we may or may not be on the air depending on tomorrow, depending on the weather in New York. But a conversation that we should have probably next week is Brock Faber's eligible for a contract extension this offseason. That is going to be one of the more fascinating extensions that we're going to see.
All of the money.
Yeah. So we'll do a deeper dive into that next week. But so there's a couple rivalries that didn't come up. Speaking of the Minnesota Wild, I scrolled through and I saw a bunch, but Minnesota and Winnipeg should absolutely be in that conversation because they're nasty. But here's I don't mean to bring it back to Toronto because I don't really think they have a rivalry with anybody. They just don't play that way. But there's something about when Toronto and Winnipeg play each other because of something that happened, you know, the Neil Pionk hit on Rasmus Sandin, and then it was Jason Spezza getting suspended. But when those two teams play each other, nasty things happen. They just don't play each other often enough that you consider it a rivalry. But Minnesota and Winnipeg should absolutely be in that conversation. That may end up being, you know, aside from Rangers and Devils and maybe Tampa Bay and Florida, that's top three for me.
You know what might be a good one to do next week is, and this is like more of a historical one, and that is what are the great loss rivalries?
Oh,
you know, like older fans will talk to you, like older fans will talk to you about Montreal and Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Like that used to be the rivalry in the NHL. Period. Like put it this way, if we had Dick Irvin on the show tomorrow, that would be one of the ones that he would cite for sure. And I don't think it's any coincidence that the night of the Richard riots, it was the Detroit Red Wings playing the Montreal Canadiens. I know I'm going back to 1955 here, but shoot me.
Mm-hmm.
But I would throw the Boston Bruins and the New York Rangers, who during the late 60s, early 70s, had the best rivalry in the NHL.
Toronto, Ottawa was fun, recently. Hey, that was fun in the playoffs.
Yes. Boston and Buffalo.
Sure.
Used to be a fantastic old Adams Division rivalry. Those were like, we think of the obvious ones, like Montreal, Quebec, and Battle of Alberta, etc. But man, you know what? Montreal and Hartford had real good ones, but Boston and Buffalo were doozies too. Let's write all these things down and make sure we get to them. Okay,
sure.
Thank you to everyone who took part in today's program. Craig Berube, Sean Reynolds, and Elliot Friedman. On our side of the glass, Matt Marchese, Lance Kennedy, and Jen Rolnick. Thank you. All the mistakes made by yours truly and not by the people I just mentioned. Back tomorrow, maybe, depending on weather with the Blue Jays game. We'll see. If not, we'll talk to you on Monday. Enjoy the games tonight. 9 of them to enjoy. Merrick Show returns either tomorrow or Monday. Either way.